Let us compose our mind, develop the faith, sadha, virya, and mindfully we shall commence the puja. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Pho. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Pho. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Pho. Namo Quan Sing Pusa. Namo Quan Sing Pusa. Namo Quan Sing Pusa. Namo Ami Tofo. Namo Ami Tofo. Namo Ami Tofo. Namo Milofo. Namo Milofo. Namo Milofo. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Sakkasangho Sanghang Namami. Okay, you all can be seated. Then let us make the final offering of this watermelon that, oh no, winter melon that was just offered. Oh, together the oranges. Okay, let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, turn to page 1 of the chanting book. Together we shall recite the puja chanting. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Naddang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micchachara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Surameraya majapamadatana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Now we shall chant the Padipa Puja offering of light. Ganna sarapaditena dipena tamadang sina tiloka dipang sambuddhang pujayami tamonodang. Ganda sambarayutena dopenahang suganghina pujaye pujaniyang tang puja bacana mutamang vanna ganda guno petang etang kasuma santatin pujayami monindasa siri pada sarorohe pujemi buddhang kasumena nena punnena mattena ca hotu mokang pang milayati yata idang me kayo tata yati vinasa bhavang adivase tuno bante paniyang parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang adivase tuno bante pale parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang adivase tuno bante bojanang parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang. Let us make our puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all this puja offering. Understanding the significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha brings forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness of ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense, which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruits of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition sooner as possible. Offerings of flower. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the born-free nibbana. Making of overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits, born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculties of saddha, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers. Sharing and transfer of merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the conditions and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Pajam. Padang Pujami. Dhammang Pujami. Sanghang Pujami. Okay, you can be seated. Then we can have our meditation. We will off the light. For those who already know how to meditate, you can proceed. For those who are new and need to train your mind, you go ahead and train your mind. you can have half an hour, 30 minutes of meditation. To meditation is relax body and mind, completely relax physical body, mental, completely at ease, relax. Tell yourself you are here to meditate, so whatever your mind wants you to think of or attend to, you tell the mind later. Please allow you to have the space, have love and compassion for you to train your mind to develop the ability to be at peace within. If you need some skillful means like mind sweeping method and metta to help you calm down, you use it. It can help you overcome the mental hindrance. These are for people who still need to train because your spiritual faculty has not stabilized. Then when you start to do that, your mind become more calm, more peaceful. It will help you to decondition your heedless thinking. Then from there, you will know how to make use of that mind that is more quiet and peaceful to become mindful within. If you need something to stabilize that silence or mindfulness, then use anapanasati or any skillful means that you are familiar with that can allow your mind to use the object of meditation to center your mind so that your mind is always with the object of meditation in silent awareness. That's why mindfulness of the in and out breath is a very good skillful means. The breath is a very good object of meditation because it is very neutral, always in the moment. So you can be silent within and just mindful of the in and out breath. Mind and breathing move as one without thought. Just train yourself. Then it will stabilize. Your meditation will progress. Your mind will become more and more quiet, more and more peaceful. Then the key to good meditation is to relax into every mind state that arises. Then silence everything. Don't try to know. Allow the mind to develop its own understanding. Without a silent mind, it's very difficult to meditate. So all of meditation is to train the mind to be peaceful, aware, silent within, relax. When body and mind is relaxed, you can be at peace. Otherwise, the agitation, the movement will cause you to have the lack of peace. And all this come about because of your mental hindrance, born of your evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion, conditioned by your self-delusion, mainly self-delusion. So all this, slowly, through the training, you will develop the understanding. Okay, I'll leave it to you to meditate. Then later on, after about 20 or minutes, I will ring the bell. who still wants to meditate, yeah, you can continue. For those who have enough, slowly, mindfully, come out of the meditation. Yeah. Let us now turn to page 6. We'll do the invocation to the devas. I will read the English translation, invocation to the devas. In this universe, in the entirety, let the devas and deities come here. Let them hear the good doctrine of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release, Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Together we shall chant the Pali. Samanta Chakawalesu Atra Gacchantu Devata Saddhamman Muni Rajas Sunantu Sakamukkadang Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa Iti peso bhagava arahang sama sambuddho Vija charana sampanno sugato lokavidu Anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati Satta deva manusanang Buddho Bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehipasiko Opanayiko Pachatang Veditabo Vinohiti Supatipanno bhagavato savakasango Ujupatipanno bhagavato savakasango Nyayapatipanno bhagavato savakasango Samichipatipanno bhagavato Savaka Sango Yadidang Chattari Purisa Yokani Atha Purisa Pugala Esa Bhagavato Savaka Sango Ahuneyo Pahuneyo Dakeneyo Anjali Karaneyo Anuttarang punyakhetang lokasati. Then the next page, Viva Chandi, four object of veneration. Vandami chetiyang sabbam sabbatane supatititang saririkeya datu mahabohing Buddha rupang sakalang sada Vandami cetiyang sabbam Sabbatani supatititang Saririka datu mahabohing Buddha rupang sakalang sada Vandami cetiyang sabbam Sabbatani supatititang Saririka datu mahabohing Buddha rupang sakala sada Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect Tripa Jamma. Buddhang pujami. Dhammang pujami. Sanghang pujami. Okay. Just relax yourself, maintain some form of attentiveness. Then we will start our Diamond Sutta. Let us turn to page 1, verse 4, opening a sutta. The unsurpassed, profound and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning. Okay, we will turn to page 98, chapter 13. Okay. Okay, before we go into this chapter 13, maybe I will read to you the chapter 14. This one is another version. This one is a new translation, the version by another person. Alex Johnson. Namaste, Alex Johnson. So chapter 13 is by what name shall we know this sutta so that it can be honored. Then after that, chapter 14 is Subhati has understood its profound meaning and was moved to tears. That's why I want to read this chapter to you. So after the Buddha explained chapter 13, then Subhati came to know how profound this Diamond Sutta was. That's why he was moved to tears. So you listen attentively. This one is for you to read up before the next session. Chapter 14. At that time, after listening to this Diamond Sutta, Subhati had understood its profound meaning and was moved to tears. He said, "What a rare and precious thing it is that you should deliver such a deeply profound teaching. Since the day I realized the eye of understanding, thanks to the guidance of the Buddha, I have never before heard teaching so deeply and so profound and so wonderful as this. Most honored one, if someone hear this sutta and have a pure and clear confidence in it, they will have a profound insight into the truth. Having perceived that profound insight, that person will realize the rarest kind of virtue and wisdom. Most honored one, that insight into the truth is essentially not insight into truth, but it is what the Buddha called insight into the truth." So this is the profoundness of the Diamond Sutta. You cannot use words to describe it, but words are necessary for communication. to convey the meaning to living beings. So when you cultivate, you should also understand it is not the word. It is the true understanding of the word. Then we go on. Most honored one, having listened to this sutta, I am able to receive and retain it with faith and understanding. This is not difficult for me, but in ages to come, in the last 500 years, if there is a person who hear this sutta, who receive and retain it with faith and understanding, then that person will be a rare one, a person of most remarkable achievement. Such a person will be able to awaken pure faith because they have ceased to cherish any arbitrary notion of their own selfhood, others, selves, living beings, or a universal self. Why? Because if they continue to hold on to an arbitrary conception as to their own selfhood, they will be holding on to something that is of non-existence. It is the same with all arbitrary conception of other selves, living being or a universal self, like Atman and all these things. These are all expression of non-existential thing. Buddhas are Buddhas because they have been able to discard all arbitrary concepts or conceptions of form and phenomena. They have transcended all perception and have penetrated the illusion of all forms. So this is a very important understanding. Then the Buddha replied, "So be it, Subhati, most wonderful, most wonderfully pleased. Oh, sorry, blessed. Will be those beings who on hearing this sutta will not tremble nor be frightened or terrified in any way. And why? The Buddha has taught this sutta as the highest perfection. And what the Buddha teaches as the highest perfection, that also the innumerable blessed Buddha do teach. Therefore it is called the highest perfection. Subhati, when I talk about the cultivation of transcendent patience, I do not hold on to any arbitrary conceptions about the phenomena of patience. I merely refer to it as the cultivation of transcendental patience. And why is that? Because then thousands of lifetime ago, the prince of Kaliga, severed the flesh from my limbs and my body. I had no perception of a self as being a soul or a universal self. If I cherished any of this arbitrary notion at that time, my limb would torn away, will be torn away. I would have fallen into anger and hatred. So this one is the Buddha Sakyamuni trying to relate one of his early life as a Bodhisattva. He was cultivating the perfection of Kanti, which is patient endurance. And he fulfilled it because of that king of Kaliga. So I think you all heard of the story before. The king was hunting, then he left the concubine and all those things behind. Then one of the concubine, I think, he went about the neighborhood and met this, the ascetic, very ugly looking with a lot of hair and all those things. But later on, she found out that this ascetic or yogi is so friendly and so wise. That's why they talk. Then the word spread. Then more and more this concubine went. Then they listened to him. He told them a lot of very good story and Dhamma. So he was trying to like convince them how he cultivate patient endurance. Then he told them, "You can do anything to me. I will not get angry or unhappy." So they did a lot of things to him, but he was as cheerful as ever, as patient as ever, and he has a lot of love, metta, and loving kindness. Then when the king came back, he saw all the concubines gone. He asked the general, "Where did they go?" And he said, "They were there listening to the ascetic." Then he went, then he listened. Then he was briefed, the king was briefed by the general. The general told him the ascetic is cultivating the perfection of patience. So the king, you know, as usual, quite arrogant. So he wants to prove to the concubine that this one, he say only he cannot perfect it. So he spoke to the ascetic, which was the Bodhisattva at that time. He said, "I was told you are practicing the perfection of patience. I really want to find out whether you can really, really endure to the perfection like you said." Then Bodhisattva Sakyamuni replied, "Yeah, O King, you can. You can do whatever you want to me." So he ordered and instructed the soldier, his men, to actually tie him out and use the horses to tear all the four limbs off. And when he did that, Sakyamuni, the Bodhisattva, didn't die. Then he invoked the power of truth. By the power of that truth, since the day he cultivated until now, he had any anger, slightest anger or unhappiness when this was done, the limbs will not come back to him. If he has perfected his perfection of patient endurance, the limbs will come back to him. The moment he said that, all the four limbs came back to him. Then the king panicked, straight away came down from the horse and apologized, paid respect. Then he, as usual, very cheerful, very happy, he said, "I should thank you, is it? You don't fear me, is it? Because you completed my final test, the perfection of patient endurance." So the Bodhisattva told him, "I vow to take you across when the day comes," means when he became the Sammasambuddha, he will be the first that Sakyamuni will take across. And you know that king of Kaliga, during the time of the Buddha's birth in India, he was one of the five wise men, the last one, the youngest one, Kondanya. That's why during the first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, when he came to the five ascetics and proclaimed this sutta, Kondanya was the first to awaken, to become a Sotapan. And this is the story behind. And this is how it connects. Actually, the Jataka story, there are a lot of things, even about karma and other things. So this one, like here, he mentioned, "I would have fallen if I had any anger or hatred, the slightest anger or hatred." Then after that, Sakyamuni also said, "I also remember, Supati, that during my 500 previous life, I had used life after life to cultivate patient endurance and to look upon my life humbly as though I were a saint called upon to suffer humility." You know what is that? A saint means an enlightened being. Call upon to suffer humility. No matter how people humiliate him, he still have the patient endurance. Just like he told the concubine, no matter what you do to me, I will not become unhappy or angry, and I will not do anything to you. Is it possible for living being to cultivate to that extent? You ask yourself, you yourself have been human beings before. The slightest thing people disturb you, you'll be tahan ready. How to cultivate patient endurance? Not easy, So, when you come to the level of understanding, your cultivation will be different. And patient endurance need a lot of wisdom. It's not just to become patient, endure, no. Enduring without understanding is not patient endurance. Enduring with wisdom and understanding is patient endurance. But there is no unhappiness at all. You don't just endure. Like in Cantonese, they call yan. But when you endure with unhappiness inside, with hatred inside, with anger inside, that is not patient endurance. That is you are forced to be patient, to endure. Or you try to suppress your anger and unhappiness. Okay, I will read on. Even then, my mind was free of arbitrary conception of the phenomena of a self, a being, a soul, or a universal self, which means the Bodhisattva at that time already cultivating the Diamond Sutta of No Mark. You understand? That's why this teaching is very different. Then, the last paragraph. Therefore, Subhati, disciples should leave behind all distinction of phenomena and awaken the thought of the attainment of supreme enlightenment. A disciple should be this by not allowing their mind to depend upon ideas evoked by the world of the senses. By not allowing their mind to depend upon ideas stirred by sound, odor, flavor, sensory touch, and any other qualities. The disciple's mind should be kept independent of any thought that might arise within it. If the disciple's mind depends upon anything in the sensual realm, he will have no solid foundation in any reality. This is why the Buddha teaches that the mind of a disciple should not accept the appearance of things as a basis when exercising charity. Now, this is very important. Subhati, as disciple, cultivate compassion and charity for the welfare of all living beings. They should do it without relying on appearances and without attachment, just as the Buddha declared that form is not form. So he also declared that all living beings are, in fact, not living beings. So this is what I always share with you all. When you have penetrated the ultimate emptiness or true emptiness, then you will come to this profound understanding of all the essential Dhamma or the existential Dhamma. To the existential world, they exist. But in ultimate reality, ultimate truth, they don't exist. That's what Heart Sutta is all about. In true emptiness, there is no form, no mind. There is no form of truth. There is no one born, no one die, no one old, no one sick. And all of the things that the existential world believes to be real or exist, in true emptiness, there is none of all this. So that's why if you cannot penetrate both the unconditioned and the conditioned worlds on wisdom, you can never live in this world. Your life is incomplete. Like I always say, without the spiritual understanding, you still have problems. your life will still be incomplete. You need to complement your life, whatever materialistic success you may have, without the spiritual understanding of the ultimate reality of true emptiness, you cannot live life. You will still have suffering, where you will have delusion. You will still attach, you will still cling. And the self-delusion is very powerful. And through this self-delusion, you will perceive all appearances or all phenomena as real, as self. Then even they may penetrate some form of non-self, but they still believe ultimately there is a true self, there is an ultimate self, there is a universal self, all-embracing self, ultimate self, or they call it in the Bhagavad Gita or the Hindu religion, Atman, the ultimate self. But for those who have realized, there is no such thing, because that oneness is not a being, it's not an individual, it's not an entity. That's why I say that pure nature, that true nature, the oneness nature or the Buddha nature, it cannot come out and live life, because it's not a being. It's not something that you can talk about, because within there is no word, no concept, no label, nothing. You cannot talk about it, like the Tao. The moment you try to talk about it or give meaning to it, you cannot describe it, because that is not the true thing. That's why the Tao Te Ching, Lao Tzu, his opening verse is very good. Tao ke tao, fei chang tao. Whatever that can be spoken of, described or talked about is not the true Tao. Then what is Tao? And yet, Lao Tzu say, nothing is apart from the Tao. From the Tao, everything comes to be. That's why you cannot comprehend this, you cannot comprehend the true understanding of Buddha Dhamma. It looks like very abstract, very contradictory. No, it's not contradictory. It's not even abstract. That is the truth, that is the reality. So whatever that can be spoken, described or talked about is not the true Tao. But yet, nothing is apart from the Tao. So what is the Tao? What is that nature? What is it? You see, when you go deep into it, you will understand. Because there is a source, understand? What is a source? S-O-U-R-C-E. What is a source? I better write on the whiteboard. You know the English word, isn't it? Source. In fact, a lot of religion, they call that thing the source. Mahayana call it the original nature, 本来的面目, the source of all things. From there, everything arises. That's why they call it by different names. Some call it the oneness nature, the Buddha nature, the true nature. Then different names come out, Nibbana, the unconditioned, and all those things. So source means from there. Oh, okay. Luckily, come back. When it comes to important point, yeah, somehow something will happen. I don't know why. But you have to be patient, eh? Then it will become okay again. So the source is the origin. That's why in science, yeah, they also have this understanding now. They say the beginning of time, beginning of creation, there is a point in time. They call this the singularity. You heard of this? Eh? Singularity. There is a point in time where everything starts. So because of this singularity, the scientists have come to know, they can calculate, yeah, how this singularity starts and how the universe become an expanding universe. Yeah. So they are actually quite close to understanding the whole thing. Einstein called it the unified theory. And because of this singularity, the expanding universe, even now the universe is still expanding at a very fast rate, which we all cannot understand. Yeah. But from the mass, the black matter, the dark matter, not black matter, dark matter and the can be seen one, they are calculating it. So they realize there is a lot of imbalance. So that's why scientists, they can predict that there is this, what they call dark matter, that they have not located, they cannot find. But recently there's some breakthrough. So this singularity is the point in time from which everything expanded. Yeah. Then if you were to trace back to this, then you can understand the whole creation. That's why they say you can meditate until you come back to the singularity, the source, which the Sammasambuddha can understand. Then you can understand the whole of creation. That's why the Sammasambuddha is very unique, very special. Then you can have the mind of God, they say. The mind of God is where you believe God create. Yeah. So this singularity is what the source is all about. From there it starts. That's why the Buddha said, mind is the forerunner of all things, mind is chief. From this, the single thought of ignorance that condition the next and the next, the next, until that form a mind take its more sophisticated form. Then when it, from the primordial, the first thought of ignorance, they call it the primordial darkness. This source, the first thought of ignorance that come out become the primordial darkness, the first delusion. Then from there it start to fall, and that one take a long time. Then it start to crystallize and become form a mind. Then the knower become the living being, the consciousness created the continent and the world. Then the living being, which is the knower, through delusion that form a mind grabs on to the knower, to the living being. And this become the traveler in space and time. And this is what samsara is all about. So now you can follow. Yeah? Yeah. So this source, you cannot describe it. You cannot talk about it. It is the source of all things. And there is no description. You cannot say this is what and what and what. The moment you try to put it into words and concept, you can never define it. That's why the Tao say, whatever that can be described, talked about, or explained, is not the true Tao. Yeah. But nothing is apart from the Tao. Why? We are from the source. Everything comes to be. So now you understand. Yeah? Can follow? Yeah. Okay. Then we continue. Huh? No need to really penetrate yet. Eh? But have an idea enough. Yeah, this is very much later only you can penetrate. Yeah. So this is chapter 14, huh? So go back and read through it. It is very, very beautiful. Yeah. So now we go to chapter 13. Then Subhati said to the Buddha, "World-honored one, what should the sutta be named? How should we respect and hold it?" The Buddha said, "Subhati, the name of the sutta is Vajrapajna Paramita. You should respect and hold it by that name. And why?" Subhati, "Prajna Paramita is spoken of by the Buddha as no Prajna Paramita. Therefore, it is called Prajna Paramita." Subhati, "What do you think? Is there any Dhamma spoken by the Tathagata?" Subhati said to the Buddha, "World Honored One, nothing has been spoken by the Tathagata." Did he lie? Huh? Did Subhati lie? So when you understand, you understand he never lied. Because in true emptiness, there is no real thing, nothing at all. Yeah, everything is just empty, yeah. In its true sense. Subhati, what do you think? Are all the modes of dust in the 3,000 great thousand world system many? Subhati said, very many. Direct translation for Mandarin, 很多. World honored one. Subhati, all modes of dust are spoken of by the Tathagata as no mode of dust. Therefore, they are called mode of dust. The world system are spoken of by the Tathagata as no world system. Therefore, they are called world system. That's why you cannot comprehend, because you use the thought, you use concept, you use idea, which are not the truth. Okay, we go on to the commentary. We see what Xuanhua said. After the Buddha said, in any place the sutta is found, there is a Buddha or a reverend disciple. Subhati asked the Buddha, "What's the name of the sutta? And what should we name the sutta? How should all arahants and sound hearers and those enlightened to condition, means conditioned enlightened one, as well as living being of the future, pay respect to this sutta?" The Buddha said, "Name it Vajrapajna Paramita." Vajra has three meanings: durable, luminous, and able to cut, means very hard. Vajra is so durable, it cannot be destroyed by anything, but can itself destroy everything. That's why the scientists also believe diamond is the hardest. It can cut through steel, concrete, everything. That's why we call it diamond cutter, where it's the hardest. So they name it Diamond Sutta is because of this, Jingang Jing. If Vajra breaks up everything, then I wouldn't have anything. And of what use would that be, you may ask? The reason you don't realize Buddhahood is just because you have everything. So this is a very good analogy, because everything is very real to you. If you didn't have anything, you could realize Buddhahood. Everything refers to what? To your attachment. All those things that you cannot put down or believe to be real. What is the source of everything? Things come from recognizing the existence of marks. So this one is easy to understand. When you recognize thing as real, means you create mark. There is a mark of a cell existing. There is mark of living being existing. There is mark of Dhamma, truth. And all the things that you come to perceive through your senses. If you didn't have anything, you could realize Buddhahood. So what is the source of everything? Things come from recognizing the existence of marks. whatever has mark, has form and appearances, and will change and become extinct, means dependent, originating, impermanent, the universal characteristic. That which has no mark is without form and appearance, and will neither change nor become extinct. No one can destroy that which is no mark, which has no mark. Then he defined what is no mark. This is very good. No mark is what? Yeah? What is written here? Without thought, what is it? And no thought is the basic substance of the mind-right phenomena. That's why from the emptiness, everything come to be. The mind stir, create. If you can realize, you can reach the realization of no thought, you have returned to the source. Understand? Yeah? Technically, that is it. But maybe for a split second you can. After that, cannot. It keep on coming back. That's why the realization of Nibbana is the cessation of form and mind. Even the pure thought also cease. Pure consciousness, pure awareness without its content. Durable Vajra breaks through thought, but not through no thought. The Vajra of no thought is durable enough to smash all existing mark. All conditioned marks are subject to outflow. So this one is very important. Conditioned mark means dependent originating within the conditioned world. No thought can destroy the spiritual penetration of heavenly demons and those of external way, because their spiritual penetration have mark. So now you understand why those who do energy field, Mara like them. Because they are thought-based, understand not? Thought-based is egoic, has mark, understand not? If you cultivate sati, mindfulness, that's why you don't get into trouble. Sati, mindfulness, awareness, got no mark, where there is no thought, no content. That's why they have no power over you. They cannot do anything to you. So now you understand, yeah? Can follow that. Yeah? Those who do energy field is thought-based, understand? You focus. You use thought to concentrate, focus. That's why the jhanic factor. Vitaka, vichara. What is vitaka? Applied thought. You apply your thought there on the object of meditation. Then you sustain your thought. So, thought-based. Apply the thought, sustain that thought. Then what happened? Then you force it into no thought. Why? Because you fix everything. Because you apply that thought and sustain that thought until it becomes so concentrated it cannot think. Understand? This one also no thought. But this no thought is with a mark inside there. Understand? Who say it's no thought? The thought say there is no thought. Where the thought think that there is no thought. Understand? Where the thought is focusing, concentrating. I have no thought. That's why they also experience pity, the third jhanic factor. Then after that, they experience sukha, spiritual bliss. Then they focus some more. That's why it becomes one-pointedness. The mind becomes so strong. Everything focused into one point. Cue into one point, no thought. Then the energy has to go somewhere in there. Where does the energy go? Yeah? That's why it concentrates and develops into energy field. Understand that? That's how they go into all the jhanic state. First jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana. Then they have to use this jhanic power or energy. They use it for what? Psychic. Understand? To do psychic feel. Psychic ability. That's how the energy feel through thought develops. Then when the energy become too strong, when they cannot control, what happened? Yeah? What happened? like nuclear energy when you cannot control. Yeah? The tsunami in Japan, how did it happen? Yeah? Through the what they call our earth core, underneath there, the seabed there, the fault line, there is this movement that caused tsunami. Then this tsunami hit Japan, the Pacific side, the coast. Then the nuclear power station, because of the earthquake and the tsunami, what happened? It get out of control, because destroyed. Then that nuclear power, the nuclear reaction inside there, they cannot stop it, because the system that's supposed to like switch over didn't come in. They even have second tier design to prevent this thing, yet it failed. I think there were two or three precautions that they had taken, but all failed. That's why it get out of control. Then this nuclear reaction, even until that time, a lot of people tried to stop it, they couldn't. So finally, I think they have to concrete the whole thing. But it is still with the radioactivity, the water and all those things. That's why that area is still inhabitable. That's why nuclear fallout is like that. So when you do psychic field, energy field, when you lose control, it's similar to what happened in all those nuclear plants. That's why they can go cuckoo, 着火也冒, run away, fire, enter Mara. Correct? 着火也冒, the Mara go in. Your Mara like this type of yogi. Very easy to become gullible. And easy to actually con them, play with them, and delude them. So a lot of this, if you are not careful, you go into psychic field, you can get into unnecessary trouble. So be very careful, don't be greedy, don't have craving, then you are okay. Just silent, relax, aware, maintain mindfulness, silent mind, heedfulness. Don't go into energy field. Try not to touch all this. You can experience it, but don't go into it. Otherwise, you have to have a very good teacher. Somebody who can really help you not to get yourself entangled. But the best advice is don't touch. If you touch, it can bring about a lot of problem. Okay, we go on. Durable Raja breakthrough thought, but not through no thought. Now you understand, Durable Raja breakthrough thought means you can realize the meditative state of inner peace, inner awareness, the silent mind, the meditative mind. But not through no thought. No thought is the energy field one. You fix them until they cannot think. There is a condition state. So that type of no thought is no use. The Vajra of no thought is durable enough to smash all existing mark or condition mark subject to outflow. So these are the true cultivation. When you are in a natural state of mind and yet you can be without thought, that is the real Vajra. Samadhi, the true samadhi, in the midst of life, not in a conditioned state, then only no thought. This one is naturally without thought, because of wisdom, because of understanding. No thought can destroy the spiritual penetration of heavenly demons. See? When you are having this type of cultivation, pure mind, pure awareness, not a conditioned state, then it can destroy the spiritual penetration, means the psychic ability of these heavenly demons, and those of the external way. You know what is external way or not? The translation from the Mandarin, Wai Tao. means non-dhamma. Because their spiritual penetration have mark, means thought base. If they have reached the state of no thought themselves, then they would not have, they would not be heavenly demon and those of external way. Means if they have realized the silent mind, the true mind. But because they have thought, they exist in form, create karma with outflow, and plant causes with outflow. The durability of Vajra can break through all such outflowing karma and causes. That's why the true cultivation is very different. Vajra is luminous. Its light can break up all darkness. Vajra is able to cut. A sharp knife can sever something with a single slice, while a dull knife saws and still cannot cut through. Vajra functions like a keen blade as it slashes through the deviation to reveal the orthodox. Vajra severs all the deviant knowledge and views of heavenly demons and those of external ways. Chop through people's affliction and slices through ignorant delusion. Vajra is an analogy. Prajnaparamita is a phenomenon. Thus, the title of the sutta is established by reference to a phenomena and an analogy. So this is how the teaching come about. There are three kinds of prajna. Now this one we have gone through. Literally prajna, contemplative prajna, and the real mark prajna. So these are the three turning wisdom. Sutamaya panya, then chintamaya panya, contemplative. Inquiry and all those things, reflect. When you reflect, contemplate, and inquire. Then the last one is true, real mark prajna, means bhavana maya panya. The first one is sutta maya panya, through hearing the sutta or the teaching of the Buddha. That is literal prajna. So literal prajna refers to the sutta. With literary prajna, you can give rise to contemplative prajna, which in turn enable ones to penetrate through to real prajna, real mark prajna. Real mark is no mark, but is not without mark. It is no mark and not without mark. So you have to understand that they are playing with words. Although essentially there is but one kind of prajna. Actually, essentially is only one prajna. But because through cultivation, you have to learn it in stages. That's why they break into three. It may be divided into the three aspects: literary, contemplative, and real mark prajna. Prajna is a denotation for a basic substance which is itself empty, which is itself false, and which is itself the middle path. Without attachment to it, it is empty. Without attachment to emptiness, it is false. Abiding in the emptiness and falseness without attachment is the middle way. Means transcending duality. So the term prajna is not translated because it includes all meaning. This Pali word is very deep in meaning and profoundness. Paramita means to arrive at the other shore. Or we also call it perfection. When you have completed your training, arrive at the other shore means you have perfected. Arriving at the other shore means completing whatever task you are doing, you have done. For example, when a common person cultivates to attain to the Buddha's position, he is said to have arrived at the other shore. The other shore is opposite the shore. If this shore did not exist, the other shore would not exist either. This shore refers to birth and death, and the other shore refers to the unconditioned or Nibbana, which is beyond birth and death. Completing the crossing from this shore of birth and death over the sea of affliction to the other shore of Nibbana is called paramita. Means you have perfected. You, Subhati, his other name is empty born. You should use the name Vajra Prajna Paramita and pay the highest respect to this sutta as if you were constantly holding it atop your head. Protecting and respecting Buddhist sutta is the same as respecting the Buddha himself. Why? A previous passage of the sutta text say, in any place where the sutta is found, it is as if there were a Buddha there. Any place this sutta is found, there can be found the Buddha's Dhamma body, the Buddha Dhamma, and the Sangha. For that reason, you should revere it, venerate it. So this is Jianhua's explanation. A deeper meaning, if you were to understand, is different. The sutta never say wherever this sutta is found. The sutta you read earlier on, he say, wherever this sutta is proclaimed, understand not? Not found. You have a book there, Dhamma Sutta, you think there's a Buddha there or not? It's not that meaning. But Xuanhua take it to mean like that. It is wherever that sutta is being proclaimed or taught, that there exists either a Sammasambuddha or one of the great disciples of the Sammasambuddha. So this is the meaning, but it's okay, because Xuanhua has his own way of explaining. That's why I realized his disciple, you put the sutta book on the floor, I tell you, they're not happy with you. They say you're very rude. You don't respect the sutta. You don't respect the Buddha. But the Buddha is not in the sutta. The Buddha has the wisdom to proclaim that sutta. Sutta is just sutta. Dhamma is just Dhamma. Dhamma points towards the truth to enable you to realize enlightenment, Nibbana. But the Dhamma is not the truth, understand not? The Dhamma are words that points towards the realization of that truth. The teaching of the Buddha is the Dhamma, and it is the truth, which is correct. But this truth is not that actual thing, because these are words, understand not? Dhamma are words. That real truth is to be realized by the wise, each for themselves. That's why the two are different. That's why if you say you understand the Dhamma, you know the Dhamma, but you have not realized it, you know only knowledge. Understand not? Because whatever you know is knowledge. That's why Krishnamurti says the most dangerous person in this world is the person who says, I know. Who know? What know? The thought know. All through memory, knowledge. And knowledge is not the truth. That's why with knowledge, you cannot live it. You cannot be the embodiment of that understanding, the Dhamma that the Buddha has taught. If you have realized that Dhamma, there is no more that Dhamma, understand not? Where you have realized that truth, as explained by the Buddha using words, then you have the embodiment of that understanding, then you have the wisdom. You truly understand. It's not a knowledge anymore. It has become a part of your nature. That's why you manifest that embodiment of that understanding. You can live in accordance with that understanding. Okay, we go on. Subhati, Prajna Paramita is spoken of by the Buddha. In order to comply with the needs of being, the Buddha spoke the existence of Prajna Paramita. But those who saw no further than common truth, developed an attachment for Prajnaparamita, which was basically false. See, when you attach to Dhamma, when you attach to the Sutta, you are trapped. You will not penetrate because you hold on to the book. You try to memorize it. You try to recite it, chant it, but you never develop the understanding of it. You cannot penetrate that Dhamma, that Sutta. Then we go on. As no Prajnaparamita. From the point of view of actual truth, the name does not exist. Since truth is apart from spoken language, huh? See? Xuanhua also know. Understand not? The real thing is not the spoken language and written word. So how can there be Prajnaparamita? It is emptiness. In actual truth, the path of words and language is cut off. That's why it's beyond thought, beyond words, beyond time. The place of the heart's working is extinguished. When language and words are cut off, what Prajnaparamita could there be? None. The place where your heart thing is gone means no thought and no words and no language are established. That's why the direct seeing is without the thought, without the word. You see things as they are. No concept, no description, nothing. Thing is just the way it is. Suchness. Zu, zu. Ta, ta, ta. The place where your heart thing is gone and no words or language are established. Then the next part of the sutta is, therefore it is called Prajnaparamita again. This one, Xuanhua explained it very well. It's spoken from the point of view of the middle way. It is a false name called Prajnaparamita and nothing more. So do not be attached. Do not be attached to emptiness and do not be attached to existence. Do not become attached to people and do not attached to phenomena. If you say there, if you say there certainly is Prajnaparamita, there is an attachment. So the Buddha added that it is no Prajnaparamita, which is the actual truth. Empty born, say the Buddha. What is your opinion of the doctrine I have explained? This refers to Subhati. Perhaps you have understood what I just said about Prajnaparamita. Let us clarify the concept. Is there any Dhamma spoken by the Tathagata? So Subhati replied, nothing has been spoken by the Tathagata. What do you say about that? The Buddha spoke Dhamma, and at the same time Subhati asked Subhati if he has spoken any Dhamma. How should he be answered? How should he answer? How should he be answered? Oh, this English not familiar. How should he be answered? How should he answer? Oh, you are right. He's referring to Buddha. Oh, thank you. I learned new English word. How should he be answered? Correct, referring to the Buddha. Subhati told him that he had not spoken Dhamma. Subhati probably took one look and understood the principle of emptiness. He was called empty born. That's why the Buddha knew he can understand. Because he was foremost in understanding emptiness. That's why he is born with emptiness, empty born. So he understood that with true real prajna, it is not the case that anything is spoken. So he said, there is nothing spoken. The Tathagata has not spoken anything. See, those who understand, they know the word is not the thing. Most people are unable to comprehend this passage of text. Clearly, the Buddha spoke Dhamma, and yet he said he has spoken Dhamma. And yet he asked if he has spoken Dhamma. Subhati, moreover, replied that he has not spoken Dhamma. What is the meaning of that? Sakyamuni Buddha and Subhati were discoursing on truth, on true real prajna. Since true real prajna does not reside in the framework of language, what can be spoken? That's why the word is not the thing. So nothing was spoken. The emptiness of the Dhamma is beyond word and speech. The Buddha spoke Dhamma for 49 years. And when the time of his parinibbana or nirvana arrived, he said that he had not spoken one word. He said, if anyone say the Tathagata has spoken Dhamma, he slander the Buddha because he has been unable to understand what I have said. So you understand this or not? This is very, very beautiful, isn't it? Very profound, isn't it? It's just like when the Buddha met that merchant after he had realized the enlightenment of Sammasambuddha. The merchant asked him, who is your teacher? I got no teacher. You think the Buddha liar? He got Alara, Uddaka, and all those people teaching him. Yet he said, I got no teacher. Because he realized this truth without a teacher. That's why it's self-realization. Yeah. Then when he proclaimed all this, when you come to understand what he teach and what he share and what he proclaim, then you realize everything that he proclaimed are words, understand not? That's why when it comes to truth, he didn't proclaim anything. He didn't really say anything. That's why his direct mind-to-mind seal, when he transmit it to this, what they call Kāsapa Buddha, you remember? Leng Yan Jing, Surangama Sutta. He just held out a flower. I don't know whether lotus flower or what flower. He didn't say a word, no. Then Kāsapa understood, no, smiled back. Receive already, finish. Like my teacher, she just held her hand explaining to somebody. The moment the hand moved, I awakened to the three universal characteristics. So how you understand all these things? Now I hold the bell. See whether you awaken to it. Or I move my hand. That's why a lot of things, when it comes to Dhamma, it may not be easy before you penetrate it or realize it. But the moment you penetrate it and you realize it, it becomes so beautiful. Then words become meaningful. Then you can use words to express it because both understand. But when you don't have the understanding, the word got no meaning. You become very confused. What are you trying to tell me? The Buddha spoke, yet the Buddha didn't speak. After 44 years, after his enlightenment, under Theravada is 45, but Mahayana is 49. I don't know how they get the figure. He became fully enlightened at the age of 35. Then he passed away 80 years old. So 45 years of teaching. But how they end up 49? They like 49, 7 times 7, 49. People die also, 9, 7 times 7, 49 days. So. Oh, maybe Chinese calendar. But cannot be. You add 9 years. Oh no, you add 4 years. Cannot be. 4 years is 1%. No. How many days the lunar month? The lunar month is shorter by 5 days only. 5 days only. No, I know. The lunar is based on 12 months, isn't it? 12 months, then they got the Jungui to match. But let's say without the Jungui also, it's 5 days. So 5 days is actually about slightly more than 1%, huh? Slightly more than 1%. So cannot be 45. 1% is only less than half a year. Never mind, not important. More important is after 40 over years of proclaiming the Dhamma, then yet he said he has not spoken a single Dhamma. And he didn't lie, he didn't contradict himself, because when it comes to Prajna Paramita, it's like that. No mark, no mark of even Dhamma. That's why nothing has been spoken. That true teaching is actually silent. Silent. Silent is the best teacher. When you can silent, that is the true nature, the true mind. Okay, we go on. Most people are unable to comprehend this passage of text. This one we have finished. Okay, since the Buddha did not speak Dhamma, why are there so many suttas spoken by the Buddha? One may rightly ask. The answer to that lies in the method of using conditioned phenomena for people bound to condition, and speaking unconditioned Dhamma for people who dwell in the unconditioned. So now you understand, in the unconditioned, there is no such thing. All of Dhamma is without word. Whereas within the conditioned world, there is this Dhamma, which is words, language and concept. So that's why Shenhua rightfully pointed out, the answer lies in the method of using the conditioned Dhamma for people bound to condition, and speaking unconditioned Dhamma for people who dwell in the unconditioned. The Varja Sutta said, even the Dhamma should be relinquished. How much the more so those which are not Dhamma? The Buddha said he had not spoken Dhamma because he was concerned that people had not spoken Dhamma. Because he was concerned that people would become attached to the mark of Dhamma. Being attached to Dhamma is the same as being attached to self. That's why self-delusion. People's attachment to emptiness must also be broken. When the Dhamma door or Prajna is spoken, even emptiness must not become an attachment. So we go on. Subhati, what do you think? Are all the modes of dust in the 3,000 great thousand world many? Modes of dust refer to invisible particles of dust, which verge on emptiness. If a visible mode of dust is divided into 7 parts, one of those 7 is empty space. One of those 7 is called a particle of dust verge on emptiness. It is the same as empty space. For instance, in empty space, there are many dust modes too small to be seen by the naked eye. They are examples of particles of dust verging on emptiness. So the Buddha said, if the minute particles as well as the ordinary visible mode of dust in the 3,000 great thousand world were many. So Subhati answered, of course he used the word a lot, but this is direct translation of Mandarin. 很多, very many, 很多. The dust is spoken of by the Tathagata as no dust. From the point of view of real mark, the middle way, they are said to be mode of dust. From the view of actual truth, they are not modes of dust. They do not exist. From the point of view of common truth, they are considered to be mode of dust. In actual fact, mode of dust is just a name. So all these are just because of words, concept and all those things. So we go on. The rest is the same. the world system also same. Eh? A mode of dust is the smallest form of dependent retribution. A world is the largest form of dependent retribution. The largest dependent retribution comes from a collection of the smallest form of dependent retribution. The world exists because great quantity of dust mode collect together. If the mode of dust was separated, the world would disappear. So the world system are spoken of by the Tathagata as no world system. Therefore, they are called world system. The doctrine above does not go beyond the empty, false, and middle. So these are the same. Eh? Recognizing the emptiness of all phenomena is actual truth. Realizing the falseness of all phenomena is common truth. That's why these are the stages. Eh? Recognizing that all phenomena are neither empty nor false is the truth of the middle way. So middle way is real prajna. Furthermore, throughout the present discourse on prajna, nothing has been spoken. It is just as when Subhati eloquently spoke prajna and the Brahma heaven king listened well to prajna until finally Subhati asked him, "What have I said?" To which the Brahma god replied, "The venerable one has not spoken well. What have you heard?" pursued Subhati. "I also did not hear a thing," came the reply. "Wow, this Brahma, not bad." "That is true prajna," confirmed Subhati. "So next time, don't try to imitate this one." "Brahma, you didn't speak anything." "I didn't hear anything." "Oh, this is real prajna." "Wow, your tail also turned out." "Boy kiao." Then that real prajna disappear. When nothing is spoken and nothing is heard, that is called true prajna. So the prajna paramita spoken by the Buddha is not prajna paramita, but is merely called prajna paramita. It is a false name and nothing more. Okay, I think we stop here. We stop here. Oh, we cover quite a bit. Six pages. We still got about 15 minutes. Okay, I want to share with you this part of the sutta, which is very good. This one is from the Mahayana one. But in the Theravada, I didn't hear this before. But this one is good. It explains to you what karma is all about. The prison guard who gave rise to compassion. During the Buddha's lifetime, he often taught by example. During a journey to the kingdom of Sanchi, I don't know why they use the names that sound like China. The Buddha and his disciple heard of an old bhikkhu, an ordained monk who was sick and alone. So they decided to visit him. When they arrived, they found the old monk confined to his bed, sick and very weak. His body was filled and foul smelling. The Buddha could not bear to see the old bhikkhu suffering like this. So he instructed his disciple to immediately cook porridge and fresh water to feed and bathe this old bhikkhu. The disciple, seeing how filthy the old bhikkhu was, did not want to be near him. The Buddha, however, paid no attention to any of these things and just bathed the bhikkhu himself. When the king of Sachi heard this story, he was very moved by it. Then he asked the Buddha, "You are the most esteemed teacher of all heavenly and human beings. Why did you wash the old bhikkhu's filthy body with your own hand?" The Buddha replied to the king's question by telling him a story from the past. Anybody know about this Jataka story or not? You don't know? When I read, I thought I heard it before. No, because there was one monk that the Buddha really, in the Theravada Sutta, really go and help clean out. But this bhikkhu in the Theravada is a different one. But this one is very meaningful, this one. You know who this monk was, this old bhikkhu. That's why the title is The Prison God Who Gives Rise to Compassion. Actually, according to the Buddha, he said, in the distant past, when Sakyamuni was still a cultivator, during that time, he met this God. The king was actually very, very weird, very funny king. He liked to torment and torture his subject one. Yeah. And he enjoyed seeing them being tormented. Yeah. So he will whip them, he will do everything, spear them and all those things, depending on their offense. Yeah. So this prison guard, this Omang at that time was the prison guard in charge of all these prisoners. So he also had to do all the punishment and all those things. And he also liked to punish all these people because these are convicts. These are real evil people who break the rules and all those things. But then one day, he came across one prisoner who is so different, though. And that one was actually Sakyamuni as a bodhisattva at that time, you know. So Sakyamuni talked to him, though. He said, "As you can see, I am different," he said. "I am being framed," he said. "Yeah. I didn't do all those things, but people framed me because of my past karma," he said. "That's why I became a prisoner." So I hope you understand, he said. Then this prison guard can feel Sakyamuni at that time, you know, as a bodhisattva. He can see how really kind, sincere, with all the what they call quality of a cultivator, and a lot of loving kindness and all those things. Yeah. Not arrogant. So because of that, he sympathized with the bodhisattva at that time. You know. So what he did was he helped the bodhisattva. Well, when it come to his time to be punished, his offense was not so severe. So he's supposed to whip him. You know. So because he's so skillful, at the beginning of the whip, he whacked the whip like it's very severe. Wow, like that. Then when it comes to hitting, the real hitting, he can control his whip, you know, until when he land, it just touch the thing only. But the sound very loud, pow! After that, he pulled the thing out. It's like very severe pain. Yeah. And because of that karma, he arises that compassion to help the bodhisattva. That life, when the Buddha was a Buddha, he was a bhikkhu, you know, and he suffered, you know, because he killed too much. I read to you, then you understand. Yeah. So that's why karma is very severe. So he told the king, he said, "Aeons ago, there was a cruel and evil king who enjoyed listening to the cries of people being brutally tortured or beaten. At the slightest infraction, this king would condemn people to severe whipping. The king went so far as to appoint the most ruthless prison guard he could find to carry out the punishment, knowing that this prison guard would see to it that the offenders really suffer terribly. At that point in time, there was a virtuous man who, though innocent, has been imprisoned and was awaiting punishment. One day, this man said to the prison guard, 'I am a spiritual practitioner who upholds the precepts and abides by the rules. I was wrongfully accused.' When the prison guard heard that, he was a practitioner and noticed his graceful and dignified appearance, he felt compassion for the man. Consequently, when he had to carry out the punishment, the guard forcefully raised his whip high, but brought it down gently so that the whip fall onto the practitioner's back softly. Although the practitioner was whipped, he suffered very little. The Buddha said, 'This filthy old bhikkhu was that prison guard in that life, and the man who was wrongly accused or wrongfully accused was me. He showed compassion towards me, and I have been hoping to repay his kindness for many, many lives. Yeah. In spite of the prison guard's extreme brutality in the previous life, which led him to suffer from poverty and sickness in many incarnations, the compassion he showed towards the innocent practitioner allowed him to meet, and he was personally attended to by the Buddha. That's why you cannot underestimate whatever good deeds or wholesome deed that you have done. You never knew who that person is. Understand not? That's why Mahayana got a saying, never offend anybody, because whoever you offend could be a potential Sammasambuddha. 得罪众生好像得罪未来佛, that is a very severe type of saying. Never offend a living being, because when you do that, you are equivalent to offending a future Buddha. You know how severe or not when you offend a future Buddha. Likewise, you help that virtuous being. It's like you're helping a future Buddha. That's why I like this prison officer. Thus, all good and evil originate from the Maya. This one you must listen. Okay, I read the other sentence before that. In spite of the prison guard's extreme brutality in his previous life, which led him to suffer from poverty and sickness in his subsequent incarnation, the compassion he showed towards the innocent practitioner allowed him to meet and be personally attended to by the Buddha. This one we have covered. So every kind of cause and condition will have a corresponding effect and retribution. This is karma, okay? The law of karma is infallible. That's why I always say, you can never violate it. In Hokkien, he will show it to you. Bo kao lu bo xiong xin. Really, like that one. If we create negative karma, we will receive negative retribution. If we create positive karma, we will receive positive retribution or beautiful blessing. Our transgression arises from the mind. Blessings are also created by the mind. Thus, all good and evil originate from the mind. That's why the Buddha always say, our mind is a forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arises, everything arises. 一切为心造, created by the mind. So you have to take care of mind, because mind is very important. So when you understand that all good and evil originate from the mind, once we deeply comprehend this law of karma, we will naturally rid ourselves of all the evil intention to commit evil, and to hold good, non-evil intention in our mind to cultivate virtue and wholesomeness. Blessing and wisdom can be seen as the 2 feet we walk on or we stand on. So this is a very good analogy, you know, to support you. You need 2 strong feet. They call the bipeds, the wisest of the bipeds, the 2-footed one. So these bipeds are the 2-legged one. So if these 2 support that support you, if you have, you will become beautiful. So what are they? They are your virtue and your wisdom. So if you can cultivate virtue or blessing and wisdom, then you will become beautiful. Blessing and wisdom can be seen as the 2 feet that supported you. If we care for them, we will have 2 strong feet that will take us wherever we want to go. Living in this world filled with impurities, if we can remain unaffected by the contentious affair of others, regardless of the circumstances, and keep our heart peaceful, unobstructed and joyous, we would have attained wisdom. When we see people suffering from illness, we compassionately extend our hand to help them. Thus, a compassionate heart creates blessing. If we are able to uphold our initial aspiration and perceive unwavering, our blessing and wisdom will naturally increase with each passing day. So this is about cultivation. That's why you follow the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil, do good. Then purify the mind. Then you will become beautiful. Then your karmic nature, your spiritual nature, they will flourish. And every life you come, choose to come or have to come, you become beautiful. You don't have to worry about life. Then everything is just the way it is meant to be, will be. That's why when you understand this secret of life, you will know how to live life. You will know how to prepare yourself, set the base for all this to happen. That's why I look back into my... at the moment is this life. But from this, I can understand what this nature has done in the past. Today, not enough time. There's another story also quite nice. It's about maybe next Tuesday. It's about one ghost. You know why that ghost? Whack that corpse. Cop means dead already, isn't it? He like take a lot of vengeance. No, still want to wall up that cop more. Then there's another scene that he saw. The heavenly being come down and pay respect to that corpse, so that was buried. He cannot understand, no, why one so angry and bitter with that dead corpse. Another one paid such reverence and with the corpse. Then there's another third one. So you go back and reflect, then let me know what you think. Why the ghost did that and why the heavenly being did that. Then there's another third one also. Okay, you got any question or not before we end? So far can follow. Maybe next Tuesday we have more time for discussion. And I read some more story for you. Pass the mic. While I have a drink.
For your understanding, I would like to know what are the relevance between knowledge and wisdom. Wisdom, in this case, would be prajna or middle way. Thank you.
Okay, very good. It's a very good question. Thank you so much for your question. You see, prajna is wisdom. Wisdom is to be realized, awakened to. Listen carefully. Whereas knowledge is memory. Understand? Knowledge is rigid, like what you learn in school. Your whatever book knowledge or whatever knowledge that you have gained through your education system, like we say the capital of Malaysia is Kuala Lumpur, that is knowledge, a fact. Then you are taught about morality, you got moral subject and all those things. Then you are taught mathematics, science, even art subject. They have a lot of this art subject, philosophy, and even humanity. Then they got, of course, accountancy is also part of art, semi-art, semi-science. Then they got various type of studies. If you were to learn it through the thought process, then it become memory, then it become knowledge, then it's not wisdom. So it's just like arithmetic, okay? arithmetic. If you learn addition as a child, as a kid in school, primary school, then if you learn it through memory, you will not understand what the teacher teach. Like 2 + 5 = 7. Then one day, the teacher say 4 + 3 = 7. You will be confused, understand not? Because you don't understand the logic behind. So that is memory. Rigid. You just learn by listening and recognizing. You store as knowledge. But if you understand the principle behind addition, then you will know both are correct. 2 + 5 = 7. 4 + 3 = 7. 1 + 6 = 7. 0 + 7 = 7. Because you understand the logic. You are not rigid. And this is not knowledge. So when it comes to that, you have slight understanding. But that is not wisdom. Understand? That is still part of knowledge extended into a limited understanding. Because it's maths. So, in our society, knowledge is required. That's why memory is required. But without wisdom, you cannot be free from suffering. That's why the real freedom or liberation of mind is wisdom, nothing else. Wisdom is an understanding that is not rigid. When it understands, it just understands. Whatever the situation, whatever the condition, it just have the understanding. It will know how to live. It will know how to accord and flow, and it will know how to go about doing whatever. And that being that have that wisdom will not suffer, will not become afflicted. So that is the major difference. So knowledge is required in our society for education, for like general knowledge, or for whatever that can help you to actually excel in the worldly sense, like in your job, in your career, or in your whatever field that you are in, your research or what. That one you need knowledge. So even to drive a car, you need to have knowledge. That's how you read the manual and all those things. Then you have to learn about how to maintain all those things. And all these are knowledge because these are all rigid. That rigid thing that you have to commit to memory or you have to learn to develop the limited understanding of it through knowledge. And this one you use thought. That's why it's very different. Then as far as the mind is concerned, we have memory. So memory is accumulation of all the knowledge that we have. That's why we retain it as memory. Yeah. That's why you have to remember the highest mountain in this world. These are knowledge, general knowledge. Then the capital city of all the various countries. Then all the facts that you, like the largest ocean, then the highest mountain, Himalayas. So these are all knowledge, which you can pick up. Now with Google, with internet, you don't have to remember. You just take out your calculator or your smartphone or your laptop. You just Google and a lot of answers will come out. So all this knowledge, they can come out. But when it comes to wisdom, it cannot. Your wisdom is beyond thought, beyond word. You have to realize it, awaken to it. It's not something you can learn. Okay? So that is the main difference. Then the other part about knowledge is our mind. Basically through memory we create thinking, thought process. That's why thought is actually respond to memory. Without memory there is no thought. That's why thought is respond to memory. And the beginning of thought is the beginning of registration through memory. That's why the newborn baby got no thought. But as they are taught various words, concept, then memory starts to accumulate, then they can think. Then they can label, they can perceive through their senses. That's how the process of thinking come about. So when it comes to thought, mainly it's knowledge-based. That's why we call it thought-based. Yeah. But our memory can also trigger of psychological fear, psychological worry, anxiety. That is the few that you have to separate. So thought got two types, mechanical thought and psychological thought. Mechanical thought through memory is useful. That's why you don't blame thought. Like I always say, there are a lot of people when they come to understand what I say or what the Buddha is trying to explain, they always blame thought, anasala. We are thought-based meditation. Thought is the source of all this problem. Yeah. That's why sankara anicang, sankara dukkang. But then the Buddha never say thought is responsible. Thought is just thought. Thought depends on the user. The user of thought is very important. If the user of thought has wisdom and understanding, then thought become right thought, wholesome thought. No more negativity of thought. So when you have this wisdom and understanding, then you will know how to use thought. For mechanical things, yeah, like education and all those things, yeah, or scientific and all those things, you use thought, no problem. Thought is very useful. You can apply it. Yeah. But when it comes to psychological fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, you don't use thought. Because if you use thought, you cannot solve it. You will become entangled and you will become more miserable. Why? Because psychological thought has this egoic mind behind. And the egoic mind that is deluded grabs and clings onto the self. We call it self-delusion. That's why it projects into the future, recall the unhappy past, which are not the reality. So through psychological movement of thought, you created the past and the future, which are not the reality. And through this, you project and create your own fear, your own worry, your own anxiety, without you realizing it. So all our suffering and misery, fear, worry, anxiety, and all those things which are psychological in nature are all created by thought. If you don't allow your thought to project and do all this, there is no psychological fear. And because of your delusion, you attach and cling on to this memory of your past phobia, your past psychological fear, worry, anxiety, or whatever that happened to you. Yeah, like you have been abused before, or you went through certain situation in life that trigger of your intense fear. That's why you have this type of dream that continuously haunt you like nightmare and all those things. Because of this accumulated hidden fear deep into the unconscious and the subconscious. So what the Buddha tried to explain to us is you must know how to use thought. That's why thought has to be understood, how it divides and creates all those psychological problems. So when it comes to psychological problem, you don't use thought. If you use thought, you will get into deep trouble. Yeah. So what you must use is awareness to see clearly how thought creates all this, torment you, delude you, and make you the way you are. Then through this awareness, mindfulness, which is meditation, you develop wisdom to come out of it. Then you become wise. Then when that wisdom is connected to this form and mind, then you know how to understand thought and use thought appropriately. That's why you will not allow all the wrong thought created by your psychological fear, worry, anxiety, and self-delusion, the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. So this psychological thought, which the Buddha call wrong thought, are the thought that condition your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow, your lamentation, your unhappiness, your misery. And this is all suffering. That's why it's called wrong thought. Then why do you hold on to it? Why do you cling on to it? Why do you allow it to manifest? This is the wrong way of using thought. Yeah. So, all this wrong thought, when they already arisen, you must arise the right effort to abandon them. Then later on, with your understanding and the wisdom, you straighten your view, you can prevent them from arising. That's how you apply the four right effort. Then you develop the understanding of what constitutes right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. Then you arise the right effort to cultivate the appropriate right thought, virtuous thought, wholesome thought, thought that bring about peacefulness of mind, calmness of mind, harmony, gentleness, pleasantness, kindness, generosity, contentment, respect for living beings and all those things. So when you have gratitude, respect and contentment, you become beautiful. Because these are all right thought without the evil roots. So right thought brings about peacefulness of mind, harmony, gentleness, pleasantness, goodness, kindness. And this is all wholesome karma, good karma. Whereas wrong thoughts are evil karmic thought. They have evil karmic consequences. So that one comes through delusion, which is based on knowledge, based on attachment. The other one comes through wisdom, understanding, which is nothing to do with knowledge. Okay? So this is a very difficult understanding. I hope you slowly develop the understanding. Yeah? Okay? Yeah. So you can rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Luckily he asked, otherwise it will not be explained. That's why you all must ask. Then I can actually expand on it. But today we don't have enough time. I exceeded 12 minutes of your time. Sorry about that. We better stop. You write down your question, you can. So that the next session, next Tuesday, we can use the whole session to discuss all this. You learn faster, and it is more relevant to life. Actually, what I shared the last 10 minutes, you should listen to it again. It's very, very profound, I tell you. If you can understand that, you can awaken. Okay, let us do the sharing of merits with the devas. Akasata cha bhumata Deva Naga Mahindika Punyang Tang Anamoditwa Chirang Rakantu Lokasasana Itta Watta Chamehi Sampadan Punya Sampadan Sabbe Deva Anamodantu Sabba Sampati Siddhya Idang Menya Tinang Hotu Sukita Hontu Nyatayo Idang me nyati nang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang me nyati nang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Imina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patia sadu. Sadhu, sadhu. Keep in respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Sakyamuni, Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the worthy ones. It's raining, you know. Huh? Oh, very heavy. Yeah, that's why I take extra 12 minutes. It's raining. Yeah. because of the sharing.